You might notice that there are no sermon questions. Do any of you do those? I had this little note on my door when I arrived. Josh, where are my sermon questions? So I've got my work cut out for me this morning. I'm going to try to keep your attention for those who rely on those sermon questions. I'm going to try to keep your attention and that you can stay with me this morning. Jesus said to his friends, "Don't let your hearts be troubled. Don't let your hearts be troubled." What was it that was troubling his friends? What was troubling the disciples' hearts that night? The scene takes place in what scholars call the farewell discourse. So these are some of the very last words that Jesus is going to give to his beloved disciples. These are the last words that his beloved disciples are going to hear from their Lord and Master, Jesus. So Jesus has already predicted his death. The disciples have already learned, in fact, they've just learned, that one of their own is going to betray Jesus. The disciples have just learned that one of their own, Peter, would deny Jesus three times. And those three things were devastating blows to the disciples. And Jesus could tell that their hearts were troubled by this news. It was enough to make the disciples question and wonder if death and evil had the upper hand. If death and evil were going to have their way, what would happen to them when their leader and their friend is gone? That would bring many sudden changes, unwelcome changes. It would mean a loss of relationship. The disciples were afraid that they would lose their relationship, their connection with Jesus. And then it might be inevitable that they might also lose the relationship and connection that they had with one another. And there are other types of losses too. Now maybe they were afraid the impending loss of their role as disciples. If Jesus, their rabbi, is gone, then who would they be disciples of? What would they do? What would happen to them? Their self-identity was crumbling right before their very eyes because of all of these losses. But this loss of relationship with Jesus, I think, is probably the primary loss that's in their mind. You know, when we lose someone that we love, when we lose someone that we love, we try to do anything, everything, to try to hold on to that connection with that person. You know, so we might save recordings of someone's voice, and then later on go back and listen to it over and over whenever we start to miss that person, whenever we become afraid that we're going to forget what that person sounded like. Or we might save garments of clothing that carry the scent of someone that's important to us. And when we think we're going to forget what they smell like, we'll take that article of clothing out and we'll hold it close and we'll smell it just to have that connection. We don't want to forget them. And that's what the disciples don't want to do with Jesus. They don't want to forget him. Their hearts are troubled by it. It's how we cope during the grieving process. And I think the disciples are on that journey of grief. And Jesus sees it. And he's trying to encourage them, trying to comfort them. Don't let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. Jesus wants them to know that the relationship that he has with them will not be touched. He wants them to know that he has the power to make relationships last for eternity. Believe in me. Believe in God. Believe also in me. He has the power. And then, so that's a very intimate setting. Now they're afraid of losing him. He wants to assure them. He wants to give them promises to encourage them. Very intimate. But then he gets even more intimate. And he uses wedding language. He says, "In my Father's house are many dwelling places. I'm going to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I'll come again and will take you to myself, so that where I am, you also may be." That's wedding language. The Jewish custom was that when a groom-to-be proposed to the bride-to-be, and that proposal was accepted, then the man would go off to his father's house, and he would begin building in addition to the house. The father's house was basically like a big family compound. And as the family got bigger through marriage, the house got bigger and bigger. And so the groom-to-be would build the addition to the house, and that would be the place where he would live with his new wife, and they would start their family. And then when the house was ready, when the addition was done, then the father would say, "Okay, it's time. Go get her." And so he would go, return to his bride-to-be, and take her to his father's house. And there in the room that he made, they would consummate the marriage. And so this is the kind of language that Jesus uses in this farewell discourse to comfort them, to assure them. But notice how, like in any healthy marriage, the focus on the language isn't the destination. The focus isn't the location. Yes, Jesus is saying that he's coming back to get his beloved disciples and take them to be with him. But the focus isn't on the location. The focus is on the relationship that he has with them. So, couples, if you are planning to get married, in fact, maybe you're engaged, and maybe you don't have a job, you don't have a place to live, you don't have any money, and your parents are giving you a lot of grief, remember this passage. It's not about where you're going to be after you get married. It's about who you're with, right? Now, I imagine that I'm going to get some parents coming up to me afterwards and saying things like, "Oh, that's irresponsible. Well, don't be giving them that bad advice." But here it is. The focus is on relationship. And you might say, but you need more than love. They say all you need is love. No, you need a job. You need a place to live. You need money. It reminds me of when I got engaged to my wife, Kim. And I quit my job. We got engaged. I moved up to Marquette in my Volkswagen van with no job and no place to live. And Kim's dad had a little sit-down with her, and then separately with me, to remind me that, all you need isn't love. You do need a job, a place to live, if you're going to marry my daughter. And so I quickly did try to scrounge up a job working at the muffin kiosk in the mall. And that was not quite enough to satisfy him, but it's working out okay. The focus is not on the destination. It's on the relationship. And you can hear that in Jesus' words. He says, there's this combination of I and you. That happened 6 times in just these first few verses. I am going to prepare a place for you. When I come back to get you, I better look at it. I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, so that where I am going, there you may be also. And then he switches around. And you know the place, and you know the place, the way to the place where I am going. It's this I and you relationship. Jesus said, when he's talking to his disciples, he doesn't say, I will come again and will take you to heaven. Although that is where we will be. He doesn't use that language. Instead, he says, I will come again and I will take you to myself. It is about relationship. Jesus isn't just going to be like our taxi driver or tour guide and just come to get us and then just drop us off for this wonderful honeymoon by ourselves. He says, when I come again, I will take you to myself, so that where I am, there you may also be. So yes, heaven, it is a glorious place. And it will be wonderful to dwell there. But the best thing about heaven is the person who we're going to be with when we're there. Jesus. And sometimes we get confused about that. I've been an ordained minister for 9 years, and so I've had several occasions to do weddings. Many occasions. And as part of the ceremony, or as part of the wedding preparation leading up to the ceremony, we always do premarital counseling. And I think it's safe to say that when the couple who's planning to get married, when all they want to talk about, and when what they get most excited about is just talking about the honeymoon, instead of talking about how they plan to have a healthy, growing marriage, then it's safe to say that they're going to have some trouble. They're going to have some trouble. It's about the relationship. When we focus on things like the pearly gates, the streets of gold, the mansion in glory, the chorus of angels, when we focus on those things, instead of on the person who will be with Jesus, then we run the risk of missing out on both of those things, the place and the person. Jesus uses this relational language. And then he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Now this is one of Jesus's best-known statements about himself. And it's also one of the most misunderstood. It's often used as a club to beat up on world religions, to show the exclusivity of our faith. And that may be part of what Jesus is saying. But I think if you look at it in the context of this passage, we see that Jesus really isn't interested in doing any of that. That statement takes place in the midst of this passage that offers comfort and assurance to the people who are following him. I am the way, the truth, and the life, he says. No one comes to the Father but through me. He is the way. Now the word used here for way means road or street or path. But once again, Jesus isn't speaking in geographical terms. He's not speaking in spatial, or not using map language. He's more than just the road to heaven. He's the way, the truth, and the life. Ray Brown, in his commentary, he says that the truth and the life part clarify how and why Jesus is the way. They clarify how and why Jesus is the way. So when Jesus says he's the way, the truth, he's saying that he is the Word of God made flesh, who has come to proclaim the truth, to reveal the truth to the world. And he is the life, because in him, the life-giving power of God dwells. And through him, Jesus will offer that life-giving power to the world. He's the way, the truth, and the life. And to know the way is to know Jesus himself. Again, it's the relational. It's the relationship between Jesus and those who follow him. To know the way is to know Jesus himself. Because Thomas, he says, Jesus, we don't know where you're going. How do we know the way? But we do know the way if we know Jesus. If you know Jesus, then you know God. And so again, it denotes that relationship that we have with God through Jesus. And it's also an invitation to walk in this way, to walk on this path. To walk on it, but also how we walk on it. As Eugene Peterson talks about in his book, The Jesus Way. It's an invitation to walk, to live a life of faithful obedience to God. So Peterson observes that walking on the way means that we can't separate what Jesus says from what he does and how he does it. So he doesn't just tell us the way. He shows us the way through what he does, through how he lived. Now, when I was young, I used to watch reruns of some of the old shows that my dad watched when he was a kid. So we would watch things like The Three Stooges, the Lucille Ball Show, Gomer Pyle. What were all those little kids? The Naughty Kids, The Rascals, Leave It to Beaver. Oh yeah, they were good. And we also used to watch the show Lassie. And Lassie was this amazing dog. Lassie was the smartest dog on the planet. And I had a dog. Her name was Jody. And she must have been, compared to Lassie, she was the dumbest dog on the face of the planet. And to compare them was very unfair. I mean, Lassie had this way of communicating. She could, was it he or she? She? Oh, well, we'll have to all go home and watch. Lassie could communicate to people, to Timmy. And so, there would be some kind of an emergency, and Lassie would know about it and would come and find Timmy and would start barking, and Timmy would say, "What's that, Lassie? Oh, really? There's a girl that fell on the bottom of a well? Well, where is she?" And, it wasn't enough for Lassie just to tell Timmy. Lassie had to show. And so, Lassie would run through the woods and over mountains and swim across seas and help Timmy to avoid from taking a dead-end path into a, dangerous cave with a mountain lion, and help Timmy avoid running into enemies that would try to capture him, who knows. And finally, Lassie would take Timmy and they would rescue, because Timmy followed on Lassie's way. And in a way, that's what Jesus is offering us. Not just telling us the way, but showing us the way. Helping us to follow. And so, what was his way? It was a way of feeding others. A way of welcoming the stranger. A way of praying. Healing. A way of setting free the prisoner. That is the way of Jesus that he invites us on. And it's by walking in that way that we come to know Jesus. And through that relationship, we know the Father. And then after that, Jesus talks about, well, he uses the word believe several times. And it's as if he realizes that, you know, this is a lot to swallow. But do we believe it? Do you believe it? It's an invitation, a challenge. Believe that I am the way, the truth, and the life. And then he says what sounds really strange to us. And we wonder how much we should, you know, how seriously we should take this. He says, "Very truly I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and in fact will do greater works than these." I mean, do you think that's really possible? That by believing in Jesus, walking in his way, that we will do works that are even greater than the ones that Jesus himself has done? To me, that just seems hard to believe. But I wonder what he meant by it. You know, maybe perhaps what he meant is that, you know, because he ascends to God and sits at God's right hand and reigns with power, working through us, maybe the greater work is that he could use such a motley crew like us to do anything. And yet, as he sits at God's right hand, he has the power to use us to do even greater things. And what might those greater things be? Then Jesus, at the end of this passage, turns to what might be called our purpose as a church, our purpose as this resurrection community. And that's to be intercessors. That Jesus would use us through our prayers to spread the message of the gospel throughout the whole earth. He will use us, even us, to do even greater things. That is hard to believe, but it's a promise that he makes. Whatever we ask in his name, he will do. So, don't let your hearts be troubled. Now, I wonder what might be troubling your heart today. What relationship do you fear losing or forgetting? Jesus wants to reassure you with this promise that no matter what loss comes your way, we can accept it. Whatever change comes your way, we can embrace it. Because he is the way, the truth, and the life. And through the loss and in the midst of the change, he He will bring new life in us. Believe it. Accept it. And walk in that way. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.